It's time for another edition of Family Life Today, presented by Power to Change, known in America as Family Life. Welcome. We trust you'll find today's program interesting and hope it will be a great encouragement to you and your own family situation. So let's join our presenters, Dave and Ann Wilson.
One of the things we all want more than anything is character. We want to be a person of character.
Yeah, and we want that for our kids as well.
So here's the question. How's character built?
Oh, I don't even want to say it.
Why?
Because the first thought that came to my mind was adversity.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that. I've preached that. I mean, character's built through hardship. And we want character, but we don't want hardship. We don't want the road to character.
Yes.
We just want to sort of end up there, but it takes a journey. Today we get to talk about that journey with Scott Sauls, pastor back in the studio of Family Life Today. Welcome back, Scott.
Thank you, Dave. And good to be with you.
I mean, you're over there smiling a little bit. Are you smiling about the idea of character or what?
No, I'm still laughing at jokes you were telling off air before we started here.
Nobody laughs at my jokes.
Scott does, though. That's good.
But, Scott, you know, when I picked up your book that we're going to talk about today, Beautiful People Don't Just Happen, I did not know from the title exactly where you're going, but as I read it, it's this journey. I mean, the subtitle is How God Redeems Regret, Hurt, and Fear in the Making of Better Humans. Pastored for, it's been over 20, 25 years now?
Coming up on 30. We planted a couple of churches in the Midwest before our years in New York City at Redeemer Presbyterian. But I've been at Christ Presbyterian Church in Nashville for the last 11 years.
And this is your sixth book?
Yes, that's number six.
Yeah, and you don't have six kids. How many kids?
We have two daughters, yes.
Well, Scott, why this book? Why this time? Like, how did it come about?
Well, it was conceived, written, and birthed during the pandemic. And candidly, I came across this quote from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who is a grief expert. And just to paraphrase it, she says that the most remarkable, empathetic people that she's ever known, the people who show up well, the people who, you know, have compassionate concern and empathy for other people are people who've been down to the depths and made their way through it somehow. And then the last line is beautiful people do not just happen. And that's where the title of the book came from. In our experience and in our ministry, the three human pain points of regret, hurt, and fear were just coming up all over the place. Y'all probably had similar experiences. Everything that had been under the surface for people just, you know, comes out in the open, explodes out in the open due to the upheaval that happened through the pandemic. And, you know, somebody asked, you know, what kind of book is this? And I'm like, I guess it's like a 21st century Presbyterian pastor trying to write something similar to Brennan Manning's Ragamuffin Gospel, just meaning that that's a book that I have looked to pastor me over the years when there wasn't somebody nearby and available. I've looked to that book to pastor me and reacquaint me with the grace of God. And I thought, you know, what if I wrote my own version of that kind of book where somebody could pick it up and say, you know, this book is a pastoral book and it's designed for people who are dealing with regret, hurt, and or fear, and people who are showing up for those people and meeting them in those places. And so hopefully it's a resource that'll help.
Oh, I mean, I was blown away by it. I really was. It's beautifully written, challenged me, challenged us as we talked about
Absolutely.
It. And I want to talk about those three pain points. But before I do that, I would love to read the opening paragraph. Either I read it.
You
can read it.
No,
you want to read it, Scott?
You
wrote it. But as I picked it up and I read this.
Dave read it out loud to me.
I'm like, listen to this. You talk about a way to start a book, especially, you know, being a pastor of a, you know, you're an influential person. But anyway, it says, you suck. And by the way, I asked my producer, hey, can we read this on air? You know, are we going to get listeners sending us emails about using the word suck? You know, every time I would say that when I was preaching, I say, parents, don't ever let your kids say what I just said. But anyway, I'll read it again. It says, you suck. When someone said this to me recently, it wasn't the sound of the words that surprised me as much as it was the person who said them. The insult didn't come from a stranger on the internet, an upset church member, a partisan antagonist, or some other usual suspect. Instead, it came from someone I have known my entire life. This person understands me inside and out. I am closer to him than I am anyone else, including my brother, my children, and even my wife. The person who told me that I suck was me. I said the words out loud while hiking alone. It slipped out of my mouth impulsively, as if from a primal instinct, without premeditation, and straight from the heart. Out of the heart, the mouth speaks.
Yeah.
You had me. I'm mm-hmm. like, here we go. Mm-hmm. Walk us through. What was that all about?
That was all about my publisher telling me I needed a better introduction.
I know what that's like.
In order for people to want to continue reading. I gave this whole, you know, theological, you know.
You really did have a different intro?
Yeah, my publisher's like, this is the best book you've ever written. But nobody's going to read it with this intro. They're going to stop. Like, he's like, have you ever read the Kindle and noticed how the highlights stop after in about the middle of chapter two?
Yeah.
Like, they won't even get to the end of this intro.
So, Scott, this is the dialogue. This is really what happened.
Yes.
Yeah, and you had me because I thought somebody else said it. And then when it's fun at the end, I'm like, okay, I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so what was going on? I mean, it wasn't just, you're saying it wasn't just one time on a hike.
Yeah.
This is a dialogue that the mouth speaks as an overflow of the heart.
Yeah. So we all carry guilt and shame and regret, you know, just stuff we wish we could hit rewind on, things that we've done, things that we've said, the people that we are, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, around lunch, we're talking about, you know, narcissism before this conversation with another guest of yours. And we're all like, well, I'm kind of a narcissist, or you, and we're unfinished people.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things the Bible is very explicit about. That's your gateway into the arms of God, and into the embrace of Christ, and ultimately into a changed life, is recognizing that you're an unfinished person.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to continue to be an unfinished person until either you die and end up with the Lord, or until he comes back and takes you home. But that particular moment, a memory popped into my head from high school, where I was an insecure 10th grade kid, and we were in homeroom, and I still remember it. There's this very shy girl in the class, easy target to pick on and make fun of. And I thought, you know, I'm feeling really insecure today. Mm-hmm. If I could just do anything to make people laugh, maybe that'll be a good drug of choice for that morning, right? And so I said across the room, hey, and said her name, you're the ugliest person I've ever seen. And the class laughs, and I felt good for a second and then felt really dirty after that.
Mm.
And, you know, and that was a situation where I sought her forgiveness and went through all that and got her forgiveness. And she was very gracious and kind, but it still sticks with me. Like, within me is the kind of person who can say and do those sorts of things.
Hmm.
Not just 10th grade me, but grown up me. I still have that ability. It's still in me. And so, yeah, the words just kind of spontaneously came out of the mouth. And it, of course, you know, the story goes on about how God provides an oasis for those kind of self-loathing moments where we wish we were somebody else, you know?
Yeah, and obviously, you know, part of that discussion in your book was about regret.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you sort of introduced regret and then hurt and anxiety and fear.
Yeah.
Talk about how, because I know there's listeners, I've been there, where I've had nights where I wake up in the middle of the night with a regret. I didn't have a lot of my, in many years of my life, but it seems like the last 10, 15 years, there were moments like it was like I regret saying something or hurting somebody in a way. In some ways, it's hard to let go of it. It's like it's a pain point, like you said.
Yeah.
So help a listener, and I know you've done it. How do you navigate that?
when you reach that point of life where you start realizing that the clock is ticking, right? You start to get more contemplative and introspective.
Maybe that's what it is, yeah.
I was just reading
Kids are older this time.
But I'm older too, you know. I'm not just saying, hey, people like you. Like, I've reached that season of my life too where I'm kind of on the back end of midlife. And I read an article a couple of weeks ago that said the older people get, the bigger they feel all their feelings. And that is so true. Like the gladness, the joy, the things that we savor get bigger and the hard stuff gets bigger. And, you know, maybe that's just God making you more human and making me more human to awaken us to, to our, ultimately to our need for what Jesus Christ is eager to provide.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, have you found a way to let go of that? I mean, I think if I'm remembering right in your book, you say the girl that you said those words to, you've gone back to her enough times where she says, Scott, we're good. Yeah. Like, you know, you just want to make sure that she understood that you.
Yeah.
And so, and sometimes like we still hold on even though we're good. And God says, you're forgiven. You can move on. But often we don't.
Yeah. And people say that.
Yeah.
You know, and people mean it. And for me anyway, it's because I've been walking with the Lord for so many years now, it's maybe even easier than it should be for me to just assume God is just so forgiving and merciful over and over and over again. And it's not presumptuous. He is. He says he is. And so, you know, it's a lot easier to get over it when I've sinned against God than it is when I've sinned against a person, because as a person, I know I have a lot less capacity to be hurt and injured and wounded by somebody else. And I assume that about other people, that like what I say to God, you know, it did leave marks on Jesus, but there are no more marks to leave on God because it was complete. The work was finished in Jesus. But when I sin against you and I say something mean or, you know, take something from you, it's not mine or whatever, it leaves a mark on you. And it also leaves a mark on me. And so I think that's the huge task, kind of pastor to pastoral couple. Like, we should be pros at this by now, but but we're still like realizing like we're fragile and everybody around us is fragile, and it's a sacred thing to hurt somebody or to be hurt by somebody. And it there should be a grief, but not one that kind of keeps us stuck in despair.
I think a lot of listeners, I think I was stuck in that for so long because probably of sexual abuse. I would say that over and over in my own head.
Say what?
I'm unworthy. I'm fat. I'm ugly. I think a lot of listeners, they go through this mantra in their heads. Some people use it as a way of motivation even, or something's been done to us and they're stuck. Like they're just stuck in this valley of like, I don't even know how to get out. I think I know I'm hearing that God says he loves me, that I'm forgiven, that I'm worthy. Yeah. But how do I get out of that?
Yeah, repetition, right? We've got to just be reminded over and over and over again. I think it was Martin Luther who, you know, somebody asked him, why do you preach the basic, simple gospel to us every single week? It's like, because you forget it every single week. And, and we're chronic amnesiacs. We forget. We absorb guilt and shame like a sponge. We leak grace and love toward us, you know, like a broken jar.
And is that you? That's like really good.
You better write that down in your journal.
Put that in your journal.
I'm married to somebody who's really great with metaphors, so it probably originated with my wife Patty. But here's the thing, and this is where I take the you suck story, where I try to take it where it belongs. Those realities about ourselves, those things we want to hide, those things we're ashamed of, those things we don't post about ourselves on social media, you know, those things that we wish were never true, those might be the things that make other people want to run the other way, but they are also the things that make Jesus want to run straight toward us and to embrace us and assure us of his love, like that father of the prodigal son was just so eager to run toward his son. You know, I think about cancer doctors, right? Because I live in a city, they call it the Silicon Valley of healthcare, Nashville. It's like a world center for healthcare. I've always been a little bit chapped that they don't call Silicon Valley the Nashville of technology. But some of these cancer doctors, like, they've cured a lot of people. And when they spot or discover a cancer patient, they're motivated. Like, they're like, let me at you. You know, like, let me at that. Let's do this, you know? Like,
I've got
what it takes to give you the best chance there is to survive this. So let's roll in ways that somebody who doesn't know the first thing about might actually avoid that person just because of the discomfort, not knowing what to say or whatever. And the Lord's like that with all of our wounds, right?
That's good.
He's drawn to that part of us, the very part of us that we are most ashamed of and repulsed by, he is most drawn to. Christ came into the world to save sinners. I did not come for the righteous, but sinners. I did not come for the healthy, but for the sick. It's why I'm here. Reminding ourselves and also surrounding ourselves with people that we can remind of these things and hear ourselves say it, and they can remind us. It's the only thing I know. I mean, candidly, if I could just be honest, last night I'm having a panic attack in the middle of the night just because I'm
you're afraid. You're afraid of Dave and Ann? Is that what it was?
No, definitely not. You guys are very approachable people.
So this is last night?
No, but it's the last night. And, you know, like, that's part of my story. I write about it in the book.
Right.
I've gotten myself into too much right now, and I'm kind of on overload and don't say no very well. And you know, a lot of things, but it just all kind of hit me like a deluge. And she could say, dude, I'm trying to sleep. You know, can you go to the next room so that, you know, I'm not bothered by this thing, you know, that you go through every now and then in the middle of the night, usually. But instead, she's like, all right, let's talk. It's like 2 a.m. She's talking me through it. And that's just part of our story. But I happen to be one of those incredibly blessed people who is married to somebody who moves toward me in my weakness instead of away from me in my weakness. And to have that person to embody the ministry of Jesus to me with all the regrets that I carry, and the unfinishedness and the damaged goods that I am on my very best day and in my very best season, to have somebody there to move in my direction instead of what
is. That's beautiful.
It's a picture of who Jesus is.
Picture of the gospel.
It's a picture of who he is all the time.
And what a beautiful picture of marriage. The way God hopes and desires that we move toward one another. Because it's so easy. Like you said, Patty could have turned.
Yeah.
I can turn and can turn away.
Mm-hmm. But you guys, when our kids come to us and they would say, like, I'm despicable. You shouldn't even love me. Like, what I've done or what I've said. As a parent, you're right, Scott, like the doctor, I want to run to them. And maybe they have done something that's really hard or horrendous. I still run toward them and saying, like, oh, man, like, we're going to love you no matter what.
Yeah.
Jesus loves you no matter what. Yeah. We do. We run toward that. I love that image that Jesus continues to pursue us.
Well, that word image, that impulse in you is the image of God in you. And to try to put definition around God's impulse.
Yeah.
Take what you feel toward your children in those moments and multiply it by a billion.
Yeah.
And you still haven't even scratched the surface of the heart of God toward somebody who's feeling despicable. Jesus made himself despicable. He was despised and rejected so that we would never have to be. You know, he took our future judgment day, he took it and moved it to the past, and took it on himself at the cross. And there's nothing left except that Father waiting to embrace his wayward children and waiting to embrace his hurting children, sinners and sufferers. That's where it's at with the Lord.
I mean, Scott, take us to, you're in the bedroom last night and you're having a panic attack. What happens mentally as Patty reaches out to comfort you? What shifts, or how do you get out of that? Or how
well,
did you?
Well, I start by feeling guilty that I've woken her up with my weakness, right? And that shifts pretty quickly as she responds with an opposite reaction. And there's comfort. That old phrase, misery loves company. Suffering alone, nothing worse, because it's so unnatural to be isolated, especially in our regret or in our hurt or in our fear. And Jesus is always there, but he's invisible. And so we struggle to access that reality sometimes. And so he gives us each other. He gives us the church and he gives us friends. And some of us, he gives us family and spouses and kids or parents or what have you. Some of us don't, you know, like both Patty and I, both of us come from a family history. We're the first generation believers in Christ. And we don't have those family photos on the beach with three generations, you know, having a ball. Like, we're going to be the grandparents in our first set of pictures like that. But we've got each other and we've got the community of the church that.
And so if you are single and you had experienced that night, you know, Patty's not there to comfort you. What is your comfort for that single person?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Heidelberg Catechism says my only comfort in life and in death is that I belong body and soul to my faithful Savior Jesus Christ. So there's always that. There's always the Psalms. There's always relatable prayers that other people like King David can give us, you know, through the Psalms, you know, out of the depths, like in caves while he's, you know, isolated, running for his life or what have you. So there's that. But, you know, ideally, if I'm a single person, I'm not alone in life. Maybe I live by myself. Maybe I have roommates, but it's very important not to be alone in life. And sometimes all it takes is to have one or two other people that, that you know, you can pick up the phone, you can show up on their doorstep and say, hey, I really need you right now. And I want you to need me when that time comes for you as well. But I really need you right now. And for some people, like it gets to a level, and it's been that case for me during certain seasons of life, where a counselor can be that friend where, you know, you can say anything, like you don't have to be guarded. You don't have to worry about losing the friendship or making the person feel differently about you. And one gift that the pandemic gave us, which is kind of a weird way to start a sentence, but one gift that the pandemic gave us was that now if you don't have good counselors in your hometown, which that's the story with a lot of people, there are good ones online.
And I've done counseling online.
Oh.
And it's like you're sitting in the room. It's just as good. It's very well.
Yeah.
What a gift God's given us.
We want to thank Dave and Ann Wilson and their team for another edition of Family Life Today. Although our programs are produced in America, the issues facing families like forgiveness, communication, and taking care of our kids transcend national borders. These issues profoundly affect relationships everywhere. In Australia, family life is known as Power to Change, and our mission is to effectively develop godly families, the kind of families that change the world one home at a time. A key part of our mission includes strengthening marriages and families all around the world. We want to do whatever we can to bring timeless truths to the challenges you face as you seek to strengthen your family and join us in changing the world. We hope you've been encouraged by what you've heard, and we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at radio@powertochange.org.au. Our website is families.powertochange.org.au, where you can check out articles and many other resources on marriage and family well-being. Until tomorrow at the same time, God's richest blessings on your family.